on the banks of the Grand River, high above the Alora Gorge. This is the Buzzer Podcast. Indie music, new releases, industry insiders, out-of-the-box conversations with guests from the true north, from the west coast to the east coast, to across the pond, and from down under. And now, here is Shay.
Hey, Shay here on Air Indie. Welcome and enjoy episode 37. First, Music History Boil Down for April 19th. In 1980, for the first time ever, the top five artists on the U.S. country chart were all female. Crystal Gayle was at number one with Dottie West, Debbie Boone, Emmy Lou Harris, and Tammy Wynette, making up the rest of the top five. Multi-talent Mooka is back on the show to talk about the Secret Warehouse of Sound. We chat about his amazing career starting in Brazil and today as a key force behind the Secret Warehouse of Sound. Located in Hackney Central, United Kingdom, which is one of the biggest artistic hubs internationally, Mooka is its founder. It has grown into a mix of a recording studio, production company, music label, and promotion company. We have an open discussion about surviving in today's music industry and what it takes to make it as an artist and a producer. Hey, it's Shay here, and today we have Mooka. He's record producer, songwriter, sound engineer, and radio shows host out of the UK. Welcome, Mooka. Thank you for joining the show.
Hi, Shay. It's a pleasure to be here with you.
Pleasure to be here with you again.
Yes.
Listeners would have heard your episode that aired on February 25th with your band, The Beat Flux. But for those that haven't heard that episode as of yet, and I encourage people to listen, tell us about your background and the Secret Warehouse of Sound and how that all came together as one.
Yes, I am originally from Brazil, from São Paulo, and I moved to the UK almost 12 years ago. Oh my God, time flies. And the whole point is that I was already working back then in a big music studio back in São Paulo, where I started I am a musician, I play guitar since I was 12 years old, but in the studio I did the engineer role, started as a runner, serving coffees, cleaning toilets, ordering food, and then with that I had the chance of learn a lot techniques, how to record, how to do things, and how to produce. And then I started back there to grow in the business. Then I became a studio assistant, sound editor, recording engineer, mix engineer, producer. But I really wanted to move to London or to Europe because I wanted to expand my musicality. And I thought I was a bit stuck there in the studio, in the same place, working, you know, 16 hours, 12 hours a day, Monday to Monday. And for me, I think England and London was the right answer because it's one of the, you know, city music capitals in the world.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, but I came here without knowing like anyone. I had literally one friend. So it's one of those things like, you know, let's see how it goes. But I obviously wanted to pursue or keep pursuing my career as a musician and producer, and naturally more as a musician, because I thought I was too stuck in the studio. When I came here, I joined London Music School, which is a small music school in East London, in Hackney, Borough of Hackney. And they had a studio, a professional studio in Brick Lane, actually a very famous studio that used to call Sarm East. It belonged to Trevor Horn, the big producer, worked with Madonna, Frankie Goes to Hollywood, Seal, and many others. That was actually his first studio. He left, he went to West, but we still had the studio back then. And then I started to do some sessions there because I had a background. And, you know, the clients, they started to like me. There was an in-house engineer. After a while, he left and I took over the place. Meanwhile, I wanted to have my own space because music changed a lot during the past 15, 20 years. It became much more affordable to make music by yourself, you know, because of computers, technology, and many other things. And I always had a vision that I could, back then, I was working in a big studio, but I could do a lot of things in a smaller space, in my space. When I found this warehouse, this dodgy, you know, grungy warehouse, because East London, although it's quite trendy for some who know, there's still a lot of things going on here. So I found this space, and basically, then when I actually kickstarted my music studio, it was the first time. It was like 6 years ago, 6 or 7 maybe. And when I was,
you know, yeah. Can I say that's so cool? So that's how your business got the name Secret Warehouse of Sam?
Yes, it was even more funny than that.
Wow. Because I love that.
Yeah, and it was a warehouse. And then back then, there was like, you know, there's a lot of trends here in London about secret warehouse parties, right? And then I was talking to a friend and I told him, hey man, I just found this space in this warehouse. And he goes, oh dude, amazing, the secret warehouse of rock and roll. I was like, this is actually a really cool name. Then I thought about using that name, but I was like, but rock and roll, I mean, producing is more than rock and roll. So then I decided to go for sound, the secret warehouse of sound. That's where it all started, basically.
That's a great story. So it started 6 years ago.
Yes, I think now more, actually, 7 years.
7 years, wow. So talk about the studio. Like, what's a normal work day, working week, or does it always change?
It depends on the project that you're working, really. Because right now, obviously, we're in the middle of a pandemic and we don't have many sessions happening. So I'm trying to work remotely with some of the clients. You know, sometimes, you know, again, a lot of things change, which helped a lot. Some people can send files for mastering, because here we have, you know, mastering facility, mixing facilities. Yeah. I'm focusing more on mixing and producing rather than recording. But it really depends on the project, basically.
And what was it like pre-COVID? Because I'm sure it'll go back to that.
Yes, pre-COVID was, I think everyone had that sort of 2020 is going to be the year, a lot of things happening, everyone's super excited, you know, because for me, I mean, I'm a completely independent studio, you know, I depend on myself, I pay all the bills, rent and all of that gear, so it's obviously not that easy to run a music studio production facilities, and now it's kind of a label, so I think everyone was very excited because, again, we had a lot of bands starting to make it, you know, bands that I produce, artists that I produce, they were looking for tours and things like that, and everything fell apart, you know. So I think that was like this kind of moments that we kind of, in my opinion, I think we got so used to the world that so easy we get everything every time. Like for food, you know, we can just get bananas in London, you know, little things like that. We got maybe a bit spoiled with the world, and maybe this virus is kind of a kick in the face to say, hey, you know, we're still humans, you know, there's some limitations of what you can do, you can't do. That's my point of view.
Yeah, it's definitely what is a kick in the face, something that we all have to get through, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So the Secret Warehouse of Sound, you have a busy roster. Is that a back catalog, or do you work with specific artists in putting out their sound and recording with them, producing their records?
Again, depends. Some of the clients, they come more for engineering. You know, they want to use the facilities because I have those microphones. I have 15, 16 years of knowledge. So obviously, you know, if they still, like, one of the things, I have a live room. In London, you won't be able to play drums on your bedroom, you know what I mean? So they still need to come to space to record. So sometimes, depending on the person, they come here and record some stuff and they bring somewhere else to mix. But I prefer much more to work on projects that I'm leading from scratch, right? That I am actually producing, or at least co-producing, because I think I can give much more input than just a technical. I'm actually focusing, I'm moving to the side much more than just engineering.
And how are you doing that?
Depends. I mean, if it there's a, I mean, I literally just recorded this guy. He's actually a student, and he asked me to just basically producing something that I always wanted to do, and for me it becomes natural. Some people are more engineer; they're great with, like, you know, all the technical stuff. They know how to wire equipment, they know how to build equipment, but maybe they're not that good with the musical side. I came from the musical side, you know. I'm a producer, I'm an engineer, I know how to do things, but I've never been a really technical guy. Even in the beginning when I was learning the technical side, it was a bit of a struggle because I don't have that brain, but I knew a lot that if I would learn that, it would help me a lot in the future. And I think it's happening, so it's quite good.
Well, one thing I do know about you, because we've spoke several times, is your passion for music. It's very strong. And what about your own music that you're putting out? You're working with some of the artists that you have at Secret Warehouse of Sound, like Emma and Muka.
Yeah, basically this, I mean, just coming back a bit in time, basically what happens as well, when I was in Brazil, I was still working that old-fashioned music business where I was working in the studio. A big label would come and say, hey, we want to record this X band's new album. And you would go there, make a budget, work 200 hours from the recording to the mixing of the album, right? Mm-hmm. Everything's changing really fast. You still have that sort of thing. But even mid-sized bands, they are already working on a different scale, right? Sometimes because they are not backing up the recordings. So everything changed. So how to make that affordable, but still as good sound quality. Not only that, I really like to literally develop artists. That's something that I really like doing. It's very challenging, but it's amazing to work. It's amazing to see when you get a band or a singer, when they just started, what you can do with them. I'm just saying all of that because it just, during this process, and it's changing, as I said. Nowadays, you can't just be an engineer. You can't just be a producer. You can't just be, you have to know a bit of everything, you know?
It's like, yeah, it's a synergetic relationship.
So basically, if you want to work in this business nowadays, you need to know a bit of everything. You need to know about a bit like of marketing, social media, PR. You need to know about of everything. Otherwise, if you expect someone to do that for you, you might not get anywhere, you know? And you may have to do that for a long time before someone, a manager or a label, comes in and join you. So I think I kind of, during this process here in London, working more with independent artists, it almost became natural that you kind of, because you want to help the artist, because obviously, you know, if one of your acts, they make it, you make it as well. So it's all my interest to help them, you know, to find deals, to, you know, to get, I think, anything. And on that process, I learned a lot on the more business side of things, which I really don't like it. But again, if I don't do, no one's going to do it for myself, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's talk about the artists. Some of the artists, you have a ton of artists that you're working with. Los Bichos. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, Los Bichos is this really nice four-piece band. And they are from all around the world, as you would expect here in London. The thing is, you have like a Australian, Uruguayan, Swedish, and English girls. And so it's a four-piece girl band, and they play this sort of a cumbia, which is this Latin style, but it's a bit more modern. And they were making big time. I mean, they're already touring. They opened for Mark DeMarco and all of that, right?
Wow.
Yeah, and COVID happened. So, but Sarah is, she's the band leader. She's a really good friend of mine. So although she is working with other people as well, and on top of that, Alex Kapranos is from Franz Ferdinand. He's actually producing their debut album, right? Mm-hmm. But they're doing a lot of things with me. We recorded two singles together here, and I'm going to do some overdubs now for the album as well. So it's quite good, you know, to see different styles. It's so good to see because they literally play cumbia and it's like instrumental music. There's no singer.
Yeah, I listened to some of the tracks. It's quite interesting music.
Yeah. So, and they're super talented, to be honest. You know, I recorded their latest single at the end of the year, just before Christmas. I came here. They're very tight. In a day, we got it all done. Like, it was simple as that. So again, I think it's good when you work with talented people as well, but it's a different sort of thing. This is more kind of a band playing together. They knew exactly what they wanted. They came here with a demo ready. And, you know, because I know them as well, it's obviously, you know, when I'm the studio, I'm very professional, but obviously when you know the person, it makes it easier, you know, to work with.
Oh, 100%. You're also working with a jazz performer, Randolph Matthews.
Yes, this guy is absolutely unbelievable. I think he's possibly the best singer that I've worked with in my life.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he is like, yeah, he's the real deal. I mean, and he's a great performer. He's a sort of a jazz, but he uses a lot of world music. Kind of, he has a lot of world music influences as well. He does beatbox. He does a lot of like other things using rhythms. He's very musical. And I met him when I moved to England. And then I produced some tracks for his latest album called Unthamed.
What's it called, Luca?
Unthamed.
Okay.
And then, because again, then we can discuss that later, I then invited him recently to join me. Because I'm working with some of my music and I'm bringing great singers to work along and I can play different styles. And I mean, we did something amazing. I cannot show you yet because you're working on the music video, but it sounds amazing. So
definitely. And you also work with a band, a rock psychedelic band with a 60s sound called The Stags.
Yes, Stags. Stags was one of those, I worked with them, like, I became more than it was like from a guy that would produce the album who became friends and ended up becoming even the band's manager, the label. You know, I released their EP called Nighttime Voices, a 5-track EP under my label. It was the first release, basically, right? And one of the reasons that I did that, because I obviously believed in the band. They had a great potential. And it was as well a way of me to learn a bit of the process of, you know, this new era, you know, how to release yourself. You know, we printed vinyls, you know, we did PR, we did everything, you know, live gig, you know, release gig and all of those things. On the business side of things as well, it was basically my, I would say, like, even my university, my music business university, because I learned a lot. I ended up becoming their manager, their PR, everything. Uh-huh. And I kind of took the role in a sense, knowing as well that I wanted to have the band and I thought they could make it, but as well that I needed to know a bit more. I hate music business, to be honest, but I know it's something necessary. You know, if you don't know those things, no one's going to do for you again. So for me, it was like just learning real life experience how to do those sort of things.
That's great. And your radio show that you have, London Calling, I believe the name of the show?
Yes.
It's okay. We're talking. So do you meet up with a lot of artists through that program? Or are these people that you meet within the artist community?
Depends. One of the reasons why I actually started the radio show is basically I'm in London, but I'm from Brazil, right? So basically I introduce new bands, up and coming artists from the UK to the Brazilian audience. And I play five, it's a kind of a very small show, but I play one band, one new act per day from Monday to Friday. One of the reasons that I did that is that I realized as a producer, you stay the whole day at the studio, listen to the same music. After some years, you really start to get to be very outdated. You don't know what's new because, you know, you spend 10 hours mixing the same track. You don't go home and listen to new music, you know, you need to rest. And I started to realize that I was like, you know, like when artists would come here and talk to me about new bands, hey, I like this kind of sound. And I was like, don't know this band, don't know the singer. It's like, oh, I need to do something about it. And it was a way of forcing myself to be up to the newest acts and new music, you know. So it depends. Some of the bands I know, some of the bands a friend refers to me, some of the bands, sometimes they contact me. But I mean, I don't have time to listen to everything, you know. I'm a very busy person.
Yeah, I agree with you.
You know, some people get a bit upset because I say no. and something we're going to discuss, you know, because I think one of the challenges that we have nowadays with this new world is that this DIY, everyone believes they can do by themselves. And they end up receiving tracks that it just doesn't sound good enough to be in the radio. And I say, sorry, man, I cannot do it. And because they want to mix it by themselves, you know, instead of hiring someone. Mm.
Well, I get why you do that. That's actually one of the biggest reasons I write for a New York City firm and cover the top 20, like popular music.
Yeah.
And it keeps me into the game in terms of current music and that. And it's really helpful in the space that I'm doing with reviewing and promoting indie music. So I really do get that. It does make a lot of sense. So the artists that you are developing and work with are all different genres. And I know we've talked in the past, you feel like I do about genre. You don't really believe in sticking to one genre.
Yes.
You work for that.
I mean, it depends what you want to do. I believe that if you get into one genre, it might be easier for you to find your niche. Yes, I do believe that, you know, 100%. But on the other hand, I just want to do different things. I want to find different challenges. And yes, sometimes I get people calling me and I listen to their genres. I say, sorry, you're not for me. You know, I can maybe refer someone. You know, I don't do rap. I don't do R&B, you know. It's not my thing, you know. So those genres, I know it's not for me. But for example, I discovered that I can produce really nice, I mean, I can produce very well folk artists. I actually, there's another guy that I produced, we forgot to mention, L.A. Salami. I know it's a weird name. Think about L.A. as the city and Salami as Salami. And, you know, this guy's doing really well nowadays. And I produced his first album called Another Shade of Blue. And, you know, I took it as a challenge and I just think it sounds amazing, you know. So, and I'm working with another folk singer now, and I just like doing it. I think it's important for you to keep your ears. I mean, if you like some sort of different genres, you know, why can't you do it?
Yeah, is that folk singer Tiger and the Homertons?
Yes, Tiger and the Homertons as well.
Can you tell me about that?
Tiger, I mean, I also teach once a week at London Music School. Nowadays, I became one of the teachers here. And he came over, and we have recording facilities here, right? So students can eventually, if they're clever enough, they can use the facilities here to record their demos or their EPs. And he really wanted to use the time to record his album. So he approached me first, asking for fees and whatever. And as usual, independent artists, when you tell their fees, they get very like, oh my God, that's so expensive. You know, okay. And then after a while, that because he experienced a lot of, you know, he's tried to do by himself, he saw that it wasn't possible. And he contacted me to help him to finish the recordings, edit, and mix the track. And I also gave him some producing advices as well.
That's awesome. I gave some of his music a listen. He's quite good.
Cool.
So when you're working with artists, what is your working style?
Depends. I mean, one of the things that I have about working back in Brazil and I was fortunate enough to work with some of the biggest producers in Brazil, is that I was there watching, observing, and learning, always quiet. That's very important when you're learning.
Yeah.
How they deal with the artists, how they work on the whole process of recording an album. And one of the guys especially became my kind of goal because, you know, he can tick all the boxes. He's a great producer, great guitarist, great bass player, great live sound engineer, great blah, 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 you know. So this is the sort of guy that I like, not the other one that just fixes on the phone the whole day and get the credit because you have that, unfortunately, right, while the engineer is working 12 hours a day. So, and he told me something, two things that I can say as a producer. I always, always listen to the artist, always. As a producer, you have to listen to the artist. Not that you're going to agree with all they say, but you have to listen to them. You know, sometimes the icing on the cake is just what they're going to say and they're not listening because you're too right on what you want to do. So I think that's very important to create something special, right? And as well, I mean, it depends. Again, everything changed. But if you're working with a band, right, the Mongrel Dogs that I produced as well, produced recently, mm-hmm. are going to record some new tracks for them. I actually like, I tell them, hey, record first any, like, you know, record on your phone, acoustic guitar and vocals, rough. Don't worry. Just send to me what you got. And with that, we start to develop the tracks. Some bands are already more experienced, so they go and rehearse and come with the arrangements ready. And then I really like, one of the things that's very important with the bands is the pre-production. It's actually more important than the recordings. It's in the pre-production that you're going to spend time to experiment, to try things out, you know, change the track's length, change the tempo, change the key, try things. Because when you're in the studio is expensive. You know, you don't want to spend hours trying a guitar solo because the guitarist doesn't know the solo. You want to be ready. You want to come to the studio and record and know what you want to do. And it makes a huge difference at the end results of any album or single.
So you have a pre-production.
Yes. Yes.
And what's that look like, that meeting?
Again, normally, let's say with Mongrel Dogs, what's happening is that now they're working with some new songs. And when they think they're ready, they're going to send me over. I'm going to listen to them. And I told them, look, write as much as you can. Because out of your 6, 7, we're going to take 2 or 3. You know, it happens as well. Choosing the repertoire is very important. You know, musicians tend to be very attached to their songs because mm-hmm. it's personal. And it's good to have someone from outside saying, look, this is still not good enough. Maybe you can develop in the future. You know, that's what happens, you know, with the you know, when dead artists release B-sides. That's probably what it was, you know. So not as good materials that for any reason, sometimes the label or whatever they decided to drop from the album, you know. So with that, we select the tracks they want to work with. Then I ask them to go to the rehearsal to rehearse. And then I step in. And I normally go to the rehearsals and I listen. I go over that because I want to see like a rock band. It's very important that a rock band can play live together.
Yeah.
You really can't do all separate with rock bands. You just lose the magic. You know, because, I mean, some people might not know, but, I mean, in music production, you can record all the instruments separate. You can record drums first and then record bass and then guitar and the leads and then piano and then vocals, harmonies, and then you mix. You know, and I've done this in the past, and it works, but a lot of times you can lose the magic because you not have that sort of band energy playing together, you know. And then this is where as well you make the decisions, you know, sometimes. it's a big decision about if you're going to use the metronome or the click track that we use, we say in production, to record. So the click track makes the bends tight because you kind of fall in rubber. But a lot of amazing albums out there back in the days were recorded without any click track. And maybe that's the magic about, you know, the song speeding up and slowing down at some certain points. But the band needs to be ready to record. You know, to record live, you need to be tight. You need to rehearse a lot. You want to make sure you're going to go there in the studio and everyone knows what to do. Otherwise, it's just a nightmare. But again, all of those things you get in the pre-production process. You know, like how many guitars are you going to use? Your effects. Make sure you know your effects. Time. You know, like all of that. So when you come to the studio, the recording is actually pleasant and nice. You don't want to keep doing like 10 takes of each track. It's actually really annoying to do that.
That's a really focused session.
Yes.
When it happens.
Yes.
I do agree with you about the magic of rock bands being together. There's definitely an energy. Definitely energy. And probably one of the pulling points of rock and roll since it began is the energy that it creates when a band is together.
Yeah, that's true. The Stax album, Nighttime Voices, for example, came out of a demo session. We went to a studio's friend. I had no studio back then. I was looking for another space. And then we decided to do a demo. And we liked so much the energy. I was like, man, the energy is there. We like now let's work on the standard to make this commercially viable sound-wise because it was very rough. But it's good to have that sort of raw, you know, energy there. And it's definitely there in the album.
So, Mukka, what qualities does a great producer have?
Study, 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 study. Try to be the best you can. Try to learn as much as you can. As I said, I think some producers, because they're quite good and they're quite capable, sometimes we forget to listen to the artist. I really believe in energy. Always you must be working with good music. Like, first of all, work with good artists and musicians. A good artist will make you sound better. That's like 100%. You know, if you work with the guy that is average, no matter how much you try to use your tricks, you're never going to get to a great result. You get a great artist, you will sound better. But it will challenge you as well, because great artists, they know they're great. So they will challenge you. That's great, because you're going to step up your game and you're going to become a better producer after that production. Yes, tune into the artist. Make sure that, I think one of the very important things sometimes, the producer needs to be open, but needs as well to show why they're there. They need the artists or the bands, they need to believe, they need to trust the producer. That's very important. If they don't trust it, it's pointless to have the producer. Better just not even to do, even to start an album. Because then you're going to start having issues, you know? You're going to try to go to a direction, they don't agree, and then it's just not productive. It doesn't flow to the right direction. And I mean, I'm telling that, I mean, there are examples of really big producers and really big artists that they started $1 million budget projects and they stopped in the middle because it didn't work, you know? Sometimes it can happen. Never happened with me, luckily, but it can happen, you know?
Well, thank you for that. If somebody wanted to work towards a role that you are doing as a producer, how would they start in the business and how would they get to where you are running your own studio and working with artists?
Again, it's now let's talk a bit about the role producer, because nowadays every 16-year-old kids tell their producers, oh, I'm a producer. I'm a producer. So the word producer changed a lot, because back in the days, you would have to learn production, you'd have to be in a music studio working closely with the big guys, and then you would learn, right? Obviously, the world changed a lot, especially from the past 20, 15 years. Now we have YouTube, and I have a lot of things over there. Yes, you have electronic music. You can do a lot of beats on your bedroom. I mean, there's no question about it. But one of the things that I think you can miss a lot is that working with people. If you work from home, it's hard for you to be in a professional environment when you're going to have to deal with a lot of issues during the recording process. And I challenge my students a lot here at the school, especially in the beginning, because they watch too much YouTube and they want to know tricks. And they come, hey, man, I just saw this trick that I can do this, this, and that to record guitar. And I say, hey, man, you don't even know the ground foundation. Can you just come and record myself quickly here now? And they don't know what to do. So I think they really need to, no matter how many tricks you know on YouTube, you really want to make sure you have your ground foundation right. You have to know, as a producer, you need to know a bit music. You can't just be good with beats, you know, and, you know, not know what a harmony is, you know, what a minor scale is. You know, you really have to study. You don't have to be the greatest arranger in the world. A producer is not that. A producer knows, theoretically, a good producer knows a bit of everything. He knows a bit about music. He has experience. He produced, he engineered before normally. He mixed before. It's very important for producers if they can play a bit of some instruments as well. Sometimes you're in the studio, have an idea, and it's better just to go to the drums and they show what you want, right? And But on the top of all the things of the producer, I would say you want to listen to the artist's vision and you want to try to get the best outcome. You want to polish that idea into something commercially ready to play in radios. I would say like that.
So because of the changes in the industry, like you talked about earlier in our program, it's a very well-rounded role that sort of, you have to have all talents in all different areas.
Yes.
And strengths, yeah. I get that. So what are your thoughts on the statement Elton John came out with recently? He wrote an article in The Guardian regarding BRIEX and its effect on UK artists.
Well, it's a mess. Otherwise, Elton John, one of the richest artists in the UK, wouldn't step in, which I think was quite important to have those big guys, right, stepping in because they have a lot of influence. We have a big issue, in my opinion, but again, it's my opinion. We had a terrible Brexit process on 5 years dragging this and not knowing what sort of agreement we would have. And suddenly we're in 2021, Brexit's in place. It's a mess. It's a real mess, not only for music. Let's clarify. You know, if I want to buy now, I don't know, a microphone from Germany, it is your mess. You know, it's getting held on, you know, customs because no one knows how to make, you know, all the declaration and all of that. It's actually better to buy a microphone from the US than Germany nowadays, right now, at this moment. But let's come back to tour. Basically, there's this big issue now that we're going to face on touring around Europe. And I think it's a real shame because the UK is by far, the UK music, right? I think it's one of the biggest sort of influence and export products that we have here. And suddenly, if you remove that visa, it's going to be a nightmare, you know, for artists to tour. It's going to cost more money. You have to remember that.
Definitely.
Especially the mid-sized, the young artists, you know, they start touring. They're already working, like, you know, if breaking even, because they invest in their career, new audiences. I don't think they're going to even be able to afford touring, you know, the way that is now. I think that's very scary. And it's a shame because, again, it's such a big industry. We've been hit so big time by COVID and now this, you know. So what are you going to do with all those people? It's an industry that makes money. I think that's the point that I'm really mad. I think people, politicians, they still have this mindset, oh yeah, the musicians. It's an industry, you know? People, they make their living out of that. And they actually make a big profit if the government allow the right laws and make sure that we have free movement. But obviously, the government will keep blaming you. They are the bad guys, not us. We want out and we want to have the rights. It's a bit of a challenge.
Yeah, I agree. Sir Elton John actually pointed out that it's okay for him because he has the legal teams to quickly get the visas he might need.
Yeah.
But a new artist who has momentum with a new release, a new album, they could look at 2 to 3 year wait before they get approval for a visa to travel to another European country.
Especially this post-COVID, hopefully, you know, we're going to get out of this mess. People are going to be eager to, like, go out, go to festivals, see bands, you know.
Oh, 100%.
People again. And then UK, one of the biggest music markets in the world, one of the biggest export of music, says, oh, no, yeah, we can't tour. I'm sorry. You're just going to get Elton John, and that's it. It's actually scary. I think this is scary. Something has to change for sure.
100%. Well, he said that this COVID time is the perfect time for the government, your government, to create a support system and get it done right. And so let's hope they listen to Sir Elton John.
Yes, yes.
So what do you feel is the industry outlook for the music industry, for artists, or for songwriters and producers?
That's a $1 million question, because if I knew, the truth that no one knows. Yeah. What happens is, again, we have a situation with streaming that I think, in my opinion, is still really far to be solved, in the sense that streaming services work in the sense that they make millions, or the labels make millions, because of catalogs, whilst the mid-sized musicians and the small musicians are not making a penny because you earn so little on streaming. So if you're a songwriter, you really can't live out of streaming. Now with COVID, because obviously if you write a song, let's say if I could write for Dua Lipa, just as an example, right? So if she starts touring, I earn royalties for the touring because they are playing my songs live for 20,000 people. But now we don't have that. And one of the things with the online world is that people, because it's virtual, that's my opinion, they don't want to pay. It's like these online gigs that people are trying to make. No one wants to pay for online gigs. They just want to watch on their phones and that's it, you know? So I think...
It's a big problem.
Yeah, it's a big challenge because, again, you know, how can, you know, we can make music? You see, this affects me as well, because if artists are not making money, they cannot afford coming here to record. So it affects the whole business, you know? And I think we still have a long way to work things out, but hope we can do it faster than we are now, because it's just not working, I personally think. I mean, very few people are earning a lot of money, you know? Mm-hmm. But again, if the artists, I was checking some of my statements on Spotify on my digital distribution. I had like 8,000 views a place on the platforms, and I got like £22. I mean, I can work at McDonald's, and in 2-3 hours, I get more money than that. It's how crazy that is, you know? And I put hours and hours and money and effort to do that.
Yeah, definitely. Well, COVID really has heightened a lot of the issues, like streaming and the compensation to artists. It's changed the outlook. A lot of artists are creating, but I was speaking with an artist yesterday, and they pointed out, well, yes, we got the time, but part of creating is experiencing life, meeting up with people, seeing things, interacting with people. So how do you feel about that? Do you think that artists will overcome that, or it could affect, I guess, the mood of the music that comes out post-COVID?
I think you have to have... Okay, let me use my example, right? So we thought that... For me, like, what happens like this. When the first lockdown happened, I was like, don't panic, shift. Think about what you can do with this time. And it was actually amazing because it was a time there was nothing happening. I say, instead of, you know, freaking out on the internet because of COVID, I'm going to go to my studio and just make music. And I did a lot of things. And I'm really happy about that. But you can't keep doing that for 2 years. You know, you lose your focus. You know, it's really hard to do. I think you're right on that. You know, life, if you're writing lyrics about experience that you have, if you just lock in at home, it's hard mm-hmm. for you to put, you know, you can put an album out of COVID, but maybe not two albums, you know. So, yes, I think I agree with the statement. And it's a challenge ahead of us, you know. How are we going to keep being creative and genuine if you're so stuck into this situation?
Well, I'm hoping and you're hoping and all the fans out there and the artists creating that we get through this and the sun will shine again and we'll back to live music.
Even on that, I mean, like, as we were speaking before you started the interview, one of the challenges that I've been noticing, like, okay, in one hand you think, oh, how amazing that is in this world that I can send my files, you know, I'm producing with this guy and I can send the track for a double bass player in Germany. He can record the files and send me back and I just, you know, he doesn't even have to come here. So, whoa, okay, that is actually amazing. But on the other hand, it's taking 5 times more than it would if the guy would just come here and just record straight because you're not there with the person talking back and forth, you know, you're not interacting. And everyone is so busy with their own lives, although they are all locked in, it's becoming very hard to get things moving. I think that's the other challenge we're facing. At least I'm experiencing that. I'm working on 5 different projects, and to get it going, it's been extremely challenging. You know, a week goes by and say, hey, you know, we haven't moved on that one. We need to, like, okay, like, let's put a deadline. Let's make this happen. Otherwise, it doesn't.
Well, I do agree with you. I'm a creative as well, and it has its challenges, and sometimes you have to rise above it and change up the way you do things in order to get through. And making commitments to yourself and others is sometimes the simplest but the best way of doing that.
Yeah.
So one thing I want to talk about before we go is the equipment in your studio. I took a look on your website. I was blown away with the... I was really blown away. Can you just talk about what you have there and...
Yes, again, my bank account is blown away as well, just so that you know.
Well, actually, I thought of that too when I saw all the stuff. I'm going, holy man.
Well,
I
think again, talk about gear, right? The advantage of working in a big studio when I started is that I always had in my mind that you have to have the best equipment to have the best results. A great microphone, a great amplifier, great equalizer, whatever. So I spent a lot of my time and a lot of my money looking for the best gear. Obviously, you know, I'm independent, so you have to look for secondhand because it's cheaper, but it takes a lot of work. And the problem with gear, let me tell you, is that it never ends. That's always something new that appears that you say, but if I have that microphone, and then you spend your money, and I go like, okay, I shouldn't have been spending this money now. It just happened the other week. I just bought a new microphone. I was like, why are you buying a new microphone? You don't need a microphone. So you have to be very careful with that. But it's great because, I mean, a microphone brings a different flavor to the sound. So if you're going to record a folk artist, you might use a tube microphone. But if you're recording a pop act, you maybe you're going to use a transistor microphone. And that adds to your palette of sounds. And I think for producers, it's sort of important to, you know, have a sort of sound signature as well.
Well, I was very impressed. The commitment that you put in music, in your artists, and your actual physical location of the secret warehouse of sound is outstanding.
Thank you.
It's amazing, Mika. So if an artist wishes to reach you to get your professional advice and work with you, how do they go about that?
You can either email info@thesecretwarehouseofsounds.com. You can speak to Lisa Knight, or you can, you know, email me directly, Mooka@thesecretwarehouseofsounds.com. You can find me on social medias as well, Mooka_music, both on Instagram and Facebook. And we can talk, you know. I think, again, I'm always looking to work with new projects and new artists and new people.
Well, that's awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming back on the podcast. I love having you as a guest. It's amazing.
Thank you very much again, Che. It's a pleasure. It's a real pleasure.
Well, thank you all for tuning in. If you enjoy listening to this podcast, please share this episode with others and post about it on social media. To catch all the latest from The Buzzer and upcoming shows, you can follow us on Instagram @TheBuzzRollMedia and on Twitter @TheBuzzerIndie. Catch you at the pod next episode, On Air Indie, from iPad to yours over the airways. Subscribe feeds @TheBuzzerPod.com. Cheers.